going to do this the old-fashioned way for a little while. So please talk very loud if you have any issues that you'd like to bring up. I'd like to start a September 13th board meeting. I'd like to call a meeting to order. Let's take a look at the agenda very quickly. One change I'd like to suggest is that we move the commissioner's report to the end of the meeting. If we have time at the end of the meeting to talk about some of the issues that we started talking about last time, we'll do that. Aside from that, we've got an information item on the RIC reduction plan update and then a decision item on U.S. Steel key tax operation. Does anybody have any board members have any additions or changes to the agenda with the exception of the change I'm proposing? Seeing none, we have a motion to adopt the agenda.
So moved.
Dr. Foley moved. Seconded by Barry Riley. All in favor?
Aye.
All opposed? Motion is adopted. Like I said, we'll move the commissioner's report to the end of the meeting. Ms. Heil, do you have a legal report?
There's no legal report.
All right. So with that, let's move into our information item, which is on the implementation of Minnesota's Mercury Reduction Plan and update, and I think Frank Kolash and the rest of the team are going to be part of that. Mr. Sandusky,
disappointed?
No, sir. No, sir. Rebecca Walter, Kathleen Neuschler, and Kathleen Winters are all here in support. A microphone may, in fact, come alive while you're talking, so be prepared for that. And we'll carry on.
Don't worry.
Mr. Sandusky.
I have the voice for it. I'm just pointed in the wrong direction. Good morning, Mr. Commissioner, members of the board. My name is Mike Sandusky. I'm the Director of the Environmental Analysis and Outcomes Division. On my left is Frank Kolash, the Manager of the Air Assessment and Environmental Data Management section in the Outcomes Division. On my right is Rebecca Walters, who's the Mercury Coordinator in the Outcomes section. Today, what we're going to do is provide a little context for the decision item that comes before you later. We're going to talk just a little bit. We're going to try and stay high. We're going to talk a little bit about mercury in the environment, which could take up a whole day if we wanted to. The mercury TMDL and what constitutes a TMDL and the unique nature of this TMDL. And then at the end, a little bit about the mercury implementation plan. Oh, and we don't have slides, so this is great. Okay, nobody will know whether I'm following my presentation or not. That's outstanding. I love that. Okay,
is the network up and running?
Shouldn't be working. Oh, I can try that.
Oh, darn. Okay. Mercury in the environment. As many of you know, this is a global problem. It's not unique to Minnesota at all. And in fact, why do we care about mercury? It's a neurotoxin. The principal concern in this state and many others is the exposure pathway, which is through consumption of fish. We do care about the water column mercury, what levels of mercury are in the water, but principally in terms of human exposure, human concern, it's the consumption of fish. The Clean Water Act provides a regulatory framework called the TMDL, Total Maximum Daily Load, to take care of water-related impairment issues. And the objective of that regulatory tool is to actually meet water quality standards. Back to Minnesota, I'm sure you're aware of this, but we have over two-thirds of our lakes and rivers are impaired, don't meet standards due to mercury. And as I mentioned before, and I'll get into this a little bit more later, most of the mercury in Minnesota does not come from Minnesota. Mercury occurs naturally in the environment, as well as from industrial sources and the disposal of products. Next slide. This is a slide that some of you have seen repeatedly. It's a prelude to describing the situation in Minnesota and the rest of the world. kind of highlights the challenges that we face, because quite frankly, in Minnesota, we could become the Buffalo Commons, not produce any mercury ourselves, and we still have a mercury impairment issue. On the left-hand part of the slide is a pie chart of the deposition worldwide. Where does mercury come from? On the right is the tangent to the 10% of mercury in Minnesota that comes from Minnesota. A little bit of explanation. Worldwide sources, that regional emissions contribution you can think of as North America. Natural emissions are things such as volcanoes and thin bedrock. So anytime you mine or anything else, you're going to release mercury. And global emissions from other point sources around the globe. The right-hand pie chart does a good job of landscaping Minnesota's mercury emissions from three principal sectors. Utilities, principally coal, energy production from coal, product disposal in Minnesota, and we're a very advanced state in terms of concerning ourselves about that, and taconite mining. Next slide. A little bit about TMDL and what makes the mercury TMDL unique to that regulatory construct. TMDLs are a process, a long-term framework for managing water quality impairments. This TMDL is very non-traditional. It's the first TMDL in this country to be used to solve, put the state on a chart of progress for, and what's mostly, as you are aware now, an air deposition problem. And in fact, this is a decades-long process. I like to call an animal of a different stripe. You need to think about terms like adaptive management and other things and putting this together. In Minnesota, when we went before this board, and in fact when we talked to EPA headquarters in Washington, much of the conversation was about leadership efforts. I'll refer back to my Buffalo Commons comment. We could take care of all of the mercury emissions in this state, and we'd still have what constitutes an impairment to mercury in most of our waters. Ultimately, the solution to this problem needs to be addressed through global reductions in mercury emissions. The TMDL process itself, at least as a construct, is pretty simple. We have to have an assessment that denotes whether or not waters are in compliance. We have to have a technical analysis that relates to the sources and their contributions to the mercury problems. Based upon that technical analysis, we create a load allocation. And very simply, this is what can we allow as emissions to get the waters back in compliance from various sectors. In this TMDL, the allocation is pretty interesting because we have dealt with, as we need to, the air deposition as non-point sources, for those of you familiar with TMDLs. And the waste load allocation is, of course, the discharges to the water directly from things like wastewater treatment plants, which constitute a very small fraction of the problem in Minnesota. TMDLs also require that we have some sort of public participation process, and I'll get into this a little bit later. EPA actually won't approve a TMDL unless we do have a public participation process. And then what I find unique is we need to create an implementation plan as a result of the TMDL. The implementation plan lays out the reduction targets and timelines, in this case by sector, kind of a chart on how we're going to make progress and how we're going to ultimately achieve our goal. EPA does not even approve the implementation plan. They approve the TMDL, and they leave it to the states to construct and execute the implementation plan. I've always found that pretty interesting. Next slide. The main objectives of this particular implementation plan, you can read the slide for yourself, but as I've just sort of alluded to, this creates no extra regulatory authority for the state. So there is no other regulatory vehicle, laws, or regulations that are provided with the development of an implementation plan. We've already spent too much time on this point, but the water portion of this is very small. So the water portion of this problem are addressed through water discharge permits. Very simple. The air emission sources, on the other hand, again, are dealt with as non-point, and what we need and received from stakeholders were commitments to reach these reduction goals without any other regulatory authority. Let me talk just a moment about the stakeholder process. It was long. It was, I think, over a year. We engaged all the principal stakeholders. So if you remember the pie chart, we engaged utilities. We engaged many parts of the product sector, and we engaged the mines. It was facilitated by what was then called Minnesota Environmental Initiative, now called Environmental Initiative. And they basically, as a group, developed the implementation plan. So all these goals and timelines that are referred to in the implementation plan were developed by the stakeholders themselves. An important point. This slide is important. It was used in the development and the stakeholder process at the end. It was used to paint a picture of the future regarding the implementation plan and our progress related to the implementation plan. It shows the sector goals and the timelines, the principal three sectors I've referenced a couple of times. In this slide, red is the energy sector, again, mostly power plant production for coal. Blue is the emission products used, so think of things like disposal of thermostats and fluorescent lighting, things of that nature. The orange and yellow is taconite mine. As you can see from this chart, most of the reductions, a significant share early on, come from the utilities. And they're actually, Minnesota's been very aggressive, there are actually laws on the books that called for reduction in the utility sector early on in this process. So that was one lever. You'll notice the taconite reductions don't come until later in the process, and this is principally because at the time of this development of the implementation plan, the technologies for removing mercury from those processes was not available. That was recognized in this implementation plan and in these strategies and timelines. The pink line is important because it shows a hypothetical path for reductions over time. It was acknowledged that it wouldn't be a straight line. There's not the 95% ANOVA that determines line fit on this particular progress. That's not what we anticipated. We acknowledge that for the state to continue to grow, we'd need to be allowing some mercury emissions that would increase the pie momentarily, as long as we kept in mind where we needed to be by certain dates for the overall reduction. Moon expanding sources. Part of what was a concern, of course, is how is this institution, the PCA, going to deal with new and expanding sources in the context of this long-range reduction plan. It's important to note that the agency developed this guidance for new and expanding, not rules, not regulations, but guidance for this new and expanding source issue based on principles provided to us by the stakeholder process. They're very simple, actually, at one level. 90% control will be required or, because we acknowledge that not everybody can do that, or equivalent reductions from other air emitting sources in equivalent amounts. The important thing to note here is a characteristic that was talked about quite a bit in the process. The agency and others acknowledged needed to keep flexibility as part of our process here for guidance. This is not policy, it's just guidance. Because we acknowledge that not only were control technologies going to be evolving over time, but if you remember the previous line graph, histogram, things were going to change over time, hopefully all for the better, regarding reductions in the state and achieving our ultimate goals. I'm going to turn it over to Rebecca now, who's going to talk about the mining sector commitment that is contained in the implementation plan.
Hello, I'm Rebecca Walter. I'll try to speak up as best I can. I don't have the voice like Mike.
You're doing a pretty good job.
Okay, good. I recently took over as the Mercury Coordinator here at the Pollution Control Agency. I have a few Mercury-related updates in addition to what Mike has told you. As far as the mining sector, each sector, as Mike mentioned, within the implementation plan made commitments or goals to make mercury emission reductions. The mining sector also made commitments for testing and installation. So for they'll complete medium and long-term testing of identified mercury reduction technologies by 2013. By 2014, they'll begin the first full-scale installation of mercury emission control equipment, and then by 2016, provide a schedule for implementation at all other existing furnaces. My first update is that goes along with that, is that the Minnesota DNR received a $3 million grant to research the mercury-controlled ATACMET facilities. The money has been distributed to six different companies, or rather six different projects, and they are due to report by September of next year, 2012, on the progress. The Minnesota Air Source Rule for mercury emissions is in process. It's expected to be out for public comment by the end of the year. And nationally, there's also been progress for mercury emissions. If you'll recall, as Mike said, 90% of mercury in Minnesota comes from outside of the state. The EPA continues to promulgate rules on major sources and recently passed a rule on utility boilers, which we have in the state, a gold mine, and cement kilns. And lastly, the Mercury TMDL Implementation Plan Stakeholder Group decided that an oversight group would meet annually until 2025. And that second annual meeting is coming up this fall. Well, we will discuss a variety of topics that have to do with mercury emission control.
That concludes our presentation. Any members have questions?
Are there any questions from the board? Mr. Wilde.
Well, in reading through the information that we'll be discussing later today, in several instances, enforcement came into play in the letters from concerned citizens. And what I'm hearing from you is this is really a guidance. And my question then, is how do you deal with a guidance that you set some limits on and they're not met? What's the follow-up on that?
Mr. Chairman, Mr. Meyer, Board Member Weil, I think this is going to be dealt with in the decision item, but what you're going to be hearing about is a permit that categorically contains the commitments that we have articulated here. So my construct for this is that, yes, then that sets up an enforcement situation for non-compliance. But all that we have talked about to this point in time are about guidance the state has created to use as a framework for the permitting process. Any other questions for Mr. Jensen?
Mr. Chairman, question is, if two-thirds of the water are impaired, can you, through your studies, are you mapping then what the immediate geographical impacts, like the power plants and so forth? Can you tell me where the one-third of the non-impaired waters basically are located as opposed to the affected waters?
It's not that simple. Because it's an air deposition problem, mercury is transported long distances. So to sort of partition or actively engage in understanding what mercury falls where is sort of beyond the point of constructing the TMDL. What we're concerned about is, yes, there is, of course, dispersion modeling that can show that there might be some local effect related to some of these point sources. But remember, the MALU is global emissions and deposition from the world, not just Minnesota. And since we're such a small, from our own state, contributor to that deposition, that really doesn't help us very much in getting to a solution to this problem.
I think it's also fair to say that the impairment isn't identified by looking at an emission and then tracking that emission to a water and then saying that's causing the impairment. The impairment is tracked the other direction. Go out and sample fish in all these waters, and two-thirds of the waters where we've done the fish work, or DNR and PCA together has done the fish work, have shown mercury issues. So you get a flag out here, and you have some known sources in-state here, and then this is part of that work that's trying to match those two pieces of the puzzle. Back to Paul.
I'm looking at your graphs of the projected emissions profile there. And obviously between 2005 and 2010, minor reductions, some of that might be that we took out some coal-burning plants and added natural gas plants. And so what gives you and gives us the assurance that the graph will go towards the 2015 major reduction? What's going to happen?
Mr. Chair, Dr. Foley, well, a couple of different things. Assurance is an interesting choice of words. Obviously, this is an important issue. The agency and the oversight group that Rebecca mentioned meet annually. We're tracking all of this. So we expect to see progress as we go forward. But it's not going to be progress year by year, lockstep, which is the whole issue that people are concerned about. This will be by permit action, by sector progress, as we go forward.
So, Mr. Chairman, just to clarify, so what will happen is you sort of have a mass balance of what we produce. And as we see the graph and as we re-permit plants, you're going to sort of readjust everybody to create that downward trend to theoretically hit these sort of graph parameters that you presented in the file. So if we move forward with adding a new source, then we're going to readjust over time everybody else so that trend line goes back down. That's how you're going to do it.
Commissioner and Dr. Foley, I think, yes. What I would add to your description is that right now what we're principally focused on are the sector goals and reductions. So within the construct you just articulated, we'll be looking at sector progress because all of those are needed to achieve the outcome.
So just to be clear, sectors will be energy production. What you have here is the different colors on your ascending bar chart. Yeah. We'll look at those and begin to recommend to us, to the agency, how you will shrink the mercury portion in each of those sectors.
Yes,
Dr. Mr. Chairman, could you also, you talked about developing control technologies and their extraction capabilities. What, we haven't seen a large amount of that in the past. What can give us, again, the assurance that the chemistry of this is actually capable of removing the element? It doesn't mean that the element goes away. We remove it and contain it someplace, because this is an element, so it's just going to move around.
Mr. Chair, Dr. Foley, I think that question is best directed to the decision I am across.
Okay. I'll ask it then.
And Mr. Sanders, within the electrical generating sector, they're still in the midst of doing some of their work, correct?
Can you correct.
Elaborate on that just a little bit?
I can elaborate a little bit.
Yeah.
State legislation, approximately 2006, called for reductions in the utility sector, and those reductions are being achieved. I'm not sure they've been fully realized, but they're being achieved.
So, just to follow up, that the projection in the red bar is a piece of that ongoing activity that just hasn't been fully realized.
So, you also showed the pie chart. Years ago, we did a fairly large mercury review and report to the legislature. At that time, Minnesota's component was about 8%, now it's 10. And we haven't seen a lot of change from anybody else. Are you anticipating that with some of the new federal regulations related to energy production or energy plants, particularly we identified Ohio Valley and the lower Mississippi Valley as areas where prevailing winds brought us additional mercury. Are we anticipating changes in that North American sector that will also decrease the deposition in Minnesota waters over this same period of time?
Mr. Chair, Dr. Foley, yes, and the additional difference, you mentioned the difference in 8%, 10%. We're also making big improvements in our own emissions inventory, which is part of the calculus of how we're tracking the emissions.
Mr. Newman has a question, and then Paula McAvee has requested to speak to this item. We'll take questions following Ms. McAvee, and then we're going to take a 15-minute break, and I'd suggest we don't sit in here during the break if they refire the microphone. But Board Member Newman.
Mr. Chairman, as I understand this, about 2% of the mercury in the state of Minnesota comes from the taconite industry in Minnesota. How was the TMDL for the taconite industry established?
Board Member Newman, the TMDL is for, not for sectors, it's for the mercury problem.
Okay.
So there is no taconite TMDL, there is the TMDL I've been referencing that embraces all of the sources of mercury. The mining sector was part of the stakeholder group that developed the TMDL and the implementation plan related to the TMDL.
Mr. Ben, so then you talk about strategy goal of 789 pounds per year. That was for the taconite?
No, that's the
overall.
Board member, that's the overall goal. For air sources.
The stakeholder group literally created a spreadsheet, and it had current emission levels on it, and it had this goal of 789 total at the end of this process. At, you know, as they were talking through this, the timeline wasn't the key, but over a period of time. And then within that, each sector went through a process of figuring out where they were going, what they could do, what technology was available, how hard they chose to push each other, how hard the agency chose to push them, until the bottom line in 2025 read 789,000. And that matched with the goal of the PMDO.
Thank you.
Ask Paul McAbee to...
One more question. In this sort of recent review that you're citing from me, do you have any information on what has happened with the sampling of itch tissue mercury levels? So over the period of time, say 2005 to now, even with modest or moderate reductions, are we seeing any change in fish tissue? I would expect not. One is deposition, and we already have mercury deposited, which then changes the methylmercury, which enters the food chain. So,
Chairman, Dr. Foley, a couple different things to say about this. You're correct.
No.
We're not, and we didn't expect to see reductions in fish tissue. It's going to take a long time, obviously. The other thing that's been interesting, we've been following and producing published literature related to mercury trends, like other states have been doing as well. And for a while, Wisconsin, for example, and Minnesota were seeing some downward trends in fish tissue concentrations. One of the research scientists in this agency took it upon himself to do a more in-depth analysis of trends statistics for mercury in this state. And I don't recall the technical name for the analysis, but it's a much more in-depth analysis looking at correlations. And what he's produced through peer-reviewed literature is that, in fact, we're actually seeing a rise in concentrations in mercury in fish in Minnesota, which not wholly unexpected, because global emissions are not really going better.
Yeah, Mr. Chairman, so what I hear from all of this is, as an agency trying to protect the environment of the state of Minnesota, on this particular issue, we can go through a regulatory exercise to do all that we can, which is a start, and we're expecting then that others will also do all that they can because of the toxic nature of this. But in effect, we're not going to change, even over 20 years, what is going to be, unless the world changes dramatically, we're not going to see a major change in mercury deposition. But we're setting an example for other people.
Mr. Chair, Dr. Foley, I mentioned it earlier. It's from the beginning. Once the TMDL formula was constructed, once our understanding of global emissions got to the point that they are today, it was all about leadership. This is all about leadership on the issue of mercury for this state.
Ms. Medgar, would you like to address this, please? For the record, please identify yourself. Thank you.
I'm Paula Magby, and I'm a lawyer representing Wild Legacy. And I've worked on mercury issues since at least 2001. A couple things I'd like to point out about mercury and then about the TMDL just in general. First, in terms of mercury and its impact on fish tissue and specific water bodies, there is a certain impact of local deposition. For example, if you look at the final EIS on the TTAC expansion project, there is an analysis of localized impacts on the lakes in the area. So there is some impact of local deposition. Some of the reasons why various Minnesota lakes have higher concentrations of mercury in the fish tissue also has to do with what Dr. Foley mentioned, which is methylation. And that means that the impact of sulfates and other biological processes on how much the mercury in the water column bioconcentrates can bioconcentrate up to 10,000 times. So that some of the inputs that may be coming out of wastewater discharge and some of the natural inclinations of our lakes, whether they are buffered or not buffered, may also impact whether the mercury that comes out of the exhaust and settles on the lake or settles into the wetland actually ends up in the fish tissue. So that if we are actually trying to have an impact, part of it is looking at, well, what is happening in the Ohio Valley. And part of it is also looking at, are we controlling aspirin? And are we controlling sulfates that are discharged in wastewater? And in terms of the literature, where, in Florida is a good example, where the mercury was more ionized and more reactive, and that was primarily from combustion of waste, reducing the mercury had a much more direct impact on the amount of mercury in the fish. Minnesota, a lot of the mercury that we're emitting from coal plants, particularly, is elemental, so it's a much more complicated chemical process, not a one-to-one reduction. In terms of the sectors, I've been involved with the coal plant mercury reduction, and the MPCA played a very important role. I'm sure you remember the Metro Emissions Reduction Project, that the utilities, Xcel Energy, reduced mercury by about 175 pounds by repowering two coal plants to natural gas and installing several hundred million dollars worth of technology at the King Coal Plant. And the reason why I want to make that point is that in that case, there were other benefits from the MRF also in terms of asthma reduction. But the total price tag for ratepayers, ordinary people mostly, you know, or small businesses, was $1.2 billion. And the amount of mercury that was reduced was about 175 pounds of emissions per year. So one of the challenges in this stakeholder analysis is that the electric utilities have the ability to pass on the cost of improving the commons, improving public health, improving the environment, to the ratepayers. The taconite mining industry, that is a shareholder issue. And I would suggest that cost implication, who pays, has at least as much to do with whether progress is or is not made in various sectors. One thing Mr. Sandusky showed you in the chart, but I just want to highlight the number. In 2005, and this is according to the mercury implementation plan, it's not conjectural, in a sense of, it's not my number, it's not Water Legacy's number. In 2005, the mining sector is 22% of total mercury emissions, 2005. Even if everything is going well, according to plan, at 2018, and that's, pretty close to the 2025 deadline, it's projected that the taconite, or the mine processing sector, will be 57% of mercury emissions. So it is becoming, as this decade progresses, a more important, significant source of mercury emissions. And also related to that is that this sector of the industry may also be a source of the sulfides and sulfates that increase ventilation. Now, this is getting, before we go into the next decision item, I just want to let you know that in the packet, we just quoted a few pages from the mercury TMDL. And the TMDL says that if actual emissions from a new or modified facility are greater than 3 pounds per year, the facility committee is expected to arrange for a reduction from existing mercury Minnesota sources equal to the new actual emissions. The MPCA will refer to these as equivalent reductions if they are beyond those otherwise required in the state's mercury emission reduction plan for existing sources. In other words, the stakeholders, the utilities, the mines, agreed that if they're putting a new source online, they will have arranged for reductions equal to the new emissions. And that's not the 789 pounds that's already being factored in. That's saying that in addition to whatever reductions they've already committed to, let's say there's 1,000 pounds and they've committed to reducing it to 200 pounds. If they're putting in another 200 pounds of mercury, they're committing to taking another 200 out. And that's what this is about, so that new emissions are supposed to be accounted for on a one-for-one basis, according to the TMDL, not according to me or my advocacy, but according to the TMDL that the stakeholders agreed to, that the PCA adopt, new emissions are supposed to be accounted for one-on-one, and they're supposed to be in addition to what's already in this plan. And I think there was also an issue that, you know, the citizens raised and my client raised, which is the timing. And in the strategy, which is part of the implementation plan, it said new sources must propose a plan and they must secure the offsets prior to operation. That doesn't, I think it doesn't mean that the offsets need to actually happen prior to operation, but it has to be determined. So if I'm going to put in 10 pounds more mercury, I have to figure out before I start putting in that 10 pounds where it's going to come out. And that's not advocacy on our part. That's right in the TMDL. We highlighted it in yellow. I think actually a lot of this, the Minnesota Center for Environmental Advocacy, the lead lawyer put it, was working on this, not here because she's at a mining conference where I was supposed to be. But she highlighted that and I just sort of put the papers in that she referenced and outlined it in yellow because that's the framework that we're carrying forward. And as Mr. Sandusky said, it's not only agreed to by the PCA, but it's agreed to by the significant stakeholders, the players who are supposed to make the reduction.
Thank you. Any board members have any questions? Dr. Bullock.
So you'd like to see a stipulation of where these reductions are actually going to come from that is fairly verifiable?
Mr. Chair, Dr. Foley, I'll go into a little bit more of the decision-making. This is how I would have envisioned the process. Let's say there's a new permit allowing for an expansion for 20 pounds more mercury a year. Then at the time that that expansion is authorized, whoever's going to do it has to either take their own plants or cut an agreement with somebody else. By this year, you're going to take 20 pounds out of your current emission stream, and we're going to monitor both and make sure it's really happening. And that could be done in permits, lawless, the PCA do that in permits, and the permittee can either say, well, I'm opening furnace one, my old furnace two, I'm going to cut it back by those 20 pounds. And that way I can operate both furnace one and furnace two. I can make more money. I can put 50 more jobs online. And I can still follow the TMDL and the agreement that I made with the agency and with the other stakeholders and with the ratepayers like us in Minnesota who already paid for cutting back the mercury out of the coal. So that's my view.
Well, Mr. Jen. And I think I had read here also that it's not limited to the state of Minnesota, that if you have, say, a corporation in Minnesota that has businesses elsewhere, they can also achieve that same or greater than 1-to-1 offset. Is that correct?
As I read, Mr. Chair, Mr. Jensen, as I read the TMDL, the preference would be to go from inside of Minnesota sources. And if there's no possibility of reduction from Minnesota sources, then it would be possible for a permittee to go outside. But once again, before the operation started, they would have to identify the offsets. They couldn't just say, we're going to seek them in the future, or we're going to research them in the future, or we might attain them in the future. So that's at least how we read the language of the TMDL, that they need to be arranged.
Mr. Sandusky, anything you want to add to that?
So because it's a worldwide problem and 90% comes from the rest of the world, an offset's an offset. Because if we went to zero, we still got a problem. So if they can give, under your proposal, at least as I resonate with it is, if they could get an offset anywhere in the world, that would be a benefit and could be applied here.
And Dr. Foley, one of the big questions that was talked about within the stakeholder group was this notion of verifiable offset.
Yeah.
And that's clearly the challenge when you're dealing with global.
I resonate, verifiable, not just, this is not a theoretical exercise. This element is not theoretically toxic. It is toxic. So we're talking is here.
Ms. McAfee.
Mr. Chair, Dr. Foley. In the TMDL, what it says is that if it's within Minnesota, it's 1-to-1. If it's outside Minnesota, the ratio goes up because there is a local pattern of deposition. So that if the new source is able to find something in the same airship, they can say, we're putting in 20 more pounds, we're taking out 20 pounds, we're even. If they were going to go down to the Ohio Valley and make an arrangement that somebody else is putting on a technology and they're going to do continuous emissions monitoring, et cetera. What the TMDL says is they have to do more than one-on-one because of the location. And so there is some impact of local deposition. It's not completely the same if we have an emission source in China versus having an emission source 5 miles up the road.
Clearly, this is as you can tell, a complicated issue. Mr. Jensen.
Mr. Chair, and not to get into the fly specking here, but is there provisions in place then that prevent, and I'm thinking on multinational corporations now, of them using those credits in multiple locations, that if they're going to, if they're committing to a specific reduction that can only be applied to the state of Minnesota, they cannot then turn around and say, or say to the state of Wisconsin, say, well, we're reducing this by the same amount, so we get that credit also.
Board Member Jensen, I view this as where we're sitting right now in this conversation, where we were on acid rain at the start of that process. This state took the lead, did some good work both in terms of advocacy and rulemaking and creating structure to deal with acid rain, which wasn't solely a Minnesota emission-driven problem. One of the outcomes of that was essentially an exchange, where you can deal with credits in that world and trade credits, and it's had an impact on sulfur deposition, on acid deposition. We're so early in this conversation that a mercury exchange today, for example, doesn't exist. So that really, even though there's an opportunity for worldwide reductions that could have a very real impact on Minnesota, creating a verifiable exchange system that would prevent the scenario you talk about, people double counting a pound of mercury, doesn't exist today. And so as we work through this, not only with this issue, but with mercury issues going forward, we're going to have to try to do what we can do to manage the system within our bounds, doing what Dr. Foley said, doing our part to the best of our ability, but then also trying to create enough momentum, enough leverage that the conversation gets bigger. And how it gets bigger at this point in time is certainly not clear to me. I don't know, Mr. Sandusky, if you have anything you want to add?
No. Does it work?
Oh, yeah.
It doesn't matter. It doesn't matter.
Just the following. This notion of mercury exchange, the documentation of offsets, and so on and so forth, the commissioners put it well because we spent a lot of time with the stakeholders attempting to sort of create a framework for that notion, the offset and exchange, and we couldn't really do it. This is, you know, if it's within business or external to business, this has all sorts of issues that the agency, quite frankly, isn't in a position to administrate. So I think the commissioner, his phrase was early on in the process, and I think that's a good one to keep.
Why don't we take a 15-minute break? We'll come back a little after 10:20. Protect your ears in the meantime. Thank you, everybody, for your patience.